Welcome to Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, and you can find out more at the website allbook-books.com. And for my new essays and poems, posted at my Substack page, Musings from Between the Lines. The link is at the homepage of the website. The recent article is about the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which connects to this book. Part 2, The Palestine Laboratory, How Israel Exports the Technology of Occupation Around the World by Anthony Lowenstein. I forgot to mention last week, published by Verso, V-E-R-S-O, 2023, which actually, next book I'm reading ties in with this book, Empire of Borders, also published by Verso. That's from 2019. But basically, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act is an attempt to get people not to say anything negative about Israel, because they equate that with anti-Semitism, which is no Jewish joke. You can look that up. A bit more to go here. This company he mentioned, Cellebrite, C-E-L-L-E-B-R-I-T-E, their tech firm. A former Cellebrite employee, previously a member of the defense establishment, wrote anonymously in Haaretz that, quote, "I can say from personal experience that the company does nothing to prevent the abuse of its products by customers." So there's this question throughout the book about, is the technology and surveillance and spying and such like, is it used in a positive sense to, for example, catch criminals, drug smugglers, or is it all negative, inappropriate spying people? So it's a mix, but it sure seems like it leans towards the negative. Work opportunities in the shadowy cyber industry have brought huge riches to Israelis with similar military backgrounds. When a hugely popular chat app, Totalk, was launched in the United Arab Emirates in 2019, it attracted millions of downloads. But it was, in fact, a spying tool. Just the latest entry from a long list of repressive states in the Gulf that have used private American and Israeli companies to design surveillance systems to monitor their own citizens. The firm Dark Matter was behind it, an Emirati corporation that has attracted former Israeli intelligence officials and national security agency staff. It's a tangled web. And here is having to do with, away from the Gulf, a number of states have embraced Israeli cyber tools because the technology was viewed as some of the most effective. South Sudan, a nation that became independent in 2011, bought communications interception technology from Israeli company Verint Systems between 2015 and 17, despite South Sudan's intelligence services being a known human rights abuser. Allegations of war crimes against the South Sudanese elites did nothing to stop the sales. Azerbaijan and Indonesia were also buyers of Verint systems and used the tools to target the gay community. Other Israeli surveillance firms were more brazen, operating in the heart of the U.S. to target pro-Palestinian activists. Does that remind you of the current topic? The now-defunct Psy Group was funded by Jewish-American donors in the U.S. after they had promised to keep their identity secret. It conducted operations around the world, from Ukraine to Canada, and used a range of dark arts, including creating fake content and spreading it online against enemies of a particular client. He mentions, the Israeli deep state, Mossad. So it's tangled stuff, and why that, virtually anything online is suspect, and even these seemingly innocuous social media groups, and you can meet your friends and talk and do all this stuff, you gotta pay attention. And part of the spying business, it's fitting with what is going on nowadays, as I see it, the no criticism is acceptable. That's part of the Anti-Semitism Act. If you criticize Israel unjustly, who's determining that? That is an offense, a criminal offense. I don't know what the legalities are. If it goes through, it passed through the House, but now the Senate has to decide. But basically, it's no other opinions tolerated, which is the historical response of empires, dictators, tyrants, and such like. And here's one example. The Black Cube client list reads remarkably similar to NSO's modus operandi, work where many others would not, in collaboration with the Israeli government. Black Cube was hired in 2015 by the Democratic Republic of Congo's then President Joseph Kabila, after the corporation's director Dan Zarella, a former member of an elite IDF intelligence unit, met with him to establish Operation Coltan. Its aim was to spy on his opponents, which included any family members who criticized him in private. There is also an issue of, is this technology going to be used to replace police? The former Black Cube staffer's work involved gathering intelligence on clients who had paid huge amounts of money to the firm. Contracts could be worth $100,000 or even more, depending on the time required to complete the work. This former staff member, who required anonymity, said that Black Cube was filling a legitimate role in society because the police were failing to properly investigate white-collar crimes due to, quote, austerity-pushed law enforcement, end quote. It was the same line used by a former top UK police officer, Adrian Leppard, who joined Black Cube's advisory board in 2020. He told the Financial Times that only 1 in 500 cyber frauds are actually prosecuted now, and that Black Cube was therefore necessary. And there's mention of a book by Shoshana Zuboff, Harvard professor and author of The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. Someone mentions a need for an international code of conduct for cyber surveillance. There have been a few major court victories against surveillance corporations. And again, the mention of Jerusalem and Colombia and indigenous communities, it was not our, the effort, you know, issues of free speech. Israel did not have much to worry about because social media platforms during this period, from Facebook to YouTube and TikTok to Twitter, routinely blocked content that was critical of Israel or showed the Palestinian point of view. Although such censorship seemed worse during this clash with Hamas, it followed a predictable path over the last decade of Palestinian posts disappearing at an alarming rate. And more seriously, both Facebook and TikTok expressed their condolences to the Israelis who had lost their lives in the conflict. This was back in the Bush era. But there was no mention of the hundreds of Palestinians killed. In the week after the meeting, the Israeli government said that Facebook was far more responsive to its requests to take down content. This is what I heard from countless Palestinians in Palestine and in the diaspora. We don't expect Facebook and other social media platforms to listen to us seriously. We need alternative outlets to be heard. While a Silicon Valley company might have an incentive to respond to a popular U.S.-American social movement, York explained, what is their motivation to respond to Palestinians or Burmese or indigenous users? These companies are always going to put profit before people. It's literally their modus operandi, end quote. None of these issues seem to bother the big tech firms. Giving lip service to minority group concerns was at best an inconvenience. They doubled down and invested even more in Israel. Staff at Google and Amazon issued a letter in protest in 2021 at the news that their employees had won work for Project Nimbus, a U.S. $1.2 billion contract to provide cloud services to the Israeli government and military. They condemned the trend of these corporations increasingly selling their services to U.S. government departments such as the Department of Defense, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, and police departments. In 2022, Google staff quit, including Jewish employee Ariel Koren, and accused the tech company of punishing anyone who questioned its association with Project Nimbus. Quote, Google systematically silences Palestinian, Jewish, Arab, and Muslim voices concerned about Google's complicity in violations of Palestinian human rights, to the point of formally retaliating against workers and creating an environment of fear, Koren wrote in her resignation letter. So this does help to explain the what is, you know, literally invested, why the police and the universities are literally invested in this kind of efforts. They are literally invested in the military and probably the surveillance firms that affect, you know, Israel, and that has to, you know, has to do with Israel, and has this effect on, in the spotlight of the news now, the Palestinians. So that is quite a good reason for them to clamp down, because it's a can of worms. Here's a quote from somebody in the book, Surveillance Capitalism. A democratic surveillance society is an existential and political impossibility. And again, a lot of this is not anti-Israel. It's anti-Zionist colonization. That's the key difference that gets overlooked. The difference between Zionism and Judaism. Two different things. Now, the conclusion to the book. It was one of the best conclusions I've read in a while, because, like, you look to a conclusion to something, not just sum things up, but add to it. Oh wait, here's a doozy. Israel's interest in incitement is highly selective. Incitement is so broadly defined by Israel that in many cases, similarly expressing support for Palestinian human rights, sharing a video online, or being opposed to Zionist colonization is deemed inappropriate. Social media posts are increasingly the sole reason a Palestinian will be detained for days, weeks, or months by the Israeli military. Israel's interest in incitement is highly selective, with very few Israeli Jews detained for the same offenses. This is despite the fact that hate speech on Hebrew language social media soared in 2020 and 2021, 9% higher than the year before, according to the Burl Katznelson Foundation and Vigo Research Institute. They found that 5.2 million comments either called for violence or were offensive, with Arabs being the main targets of abuse. Palestinian activist Darin Tatar suffered years of house arrest and months in prison in 2018 for writing a poem that contained the words, "Resist, my people, resist them." Israel accused her of, quote, "inciting terrorism," end quote. Now that is how Orwellianly flipped this is, that people that are bombing hospitals and starving women and children and killing up to like 40,000 now, would consider inciting of terrorism to say resist. Okay, in the conclusion, the areas for change. People making conscious investments and caring about human rights. Avenues other than the legal system. A consciousness shift because of Jewish morality, history, and the Holocaust. I'm not sure what I meant by there, but some kind of consciousness shift with you know, what's actually going on here. A global opinion shift. A global opinion shift, which is unlikely with the current defense policies, but some kind of shift could happen. Again, I think that's, many people think that's why they're clamping down so hard on the Palestinian, the protests pro-Palestinian, which I think Chris Hedges mentioned, 40% Jewish people protesting against the treatment by the Zionist Israel. So it's very, you know, it's very much tied in to a lot of stuff. In the conclusion, some of the key phrases I took out of the conclusion were the surveillance, the drones, and the ethno-nationalist fervor and defense industries are built into the system of domination. And it's there's a border surveillance industrial complex. Another one of the riffs of Dwight D. Eisenhower. And another phrase I found especially tantalizing, messianic Jewish supremacism. This given as a tantalizing, I say that flippantly, messianic Jewish supremacism. This given as a psychological analysis for what is behind the madness. And a few quotes from the conclusion. The growth, this is quoting somebody speaking, the growth of Israel's defense industries is a story of success inseparable from the history of the state of Israel and the entire Zionist project, wrote right-wing Israeli think tank, the Jerusalem Institute for Strategy and Security, in 2018. Israel's defense industries are a source of national pride, and rightfully so. And rightfully so. Now that's the arrogance that I find that, I'll give an anecdote. New York drivers tend to tailgate a certain percentage. So One time I attempted to outsmart a tailgate on a side road of about 35, 40 miles an hour. So I put on my flashers as if, you know, sort of like playing possum, as if to say I had a problem. And I slowly started to pull over to the side of the road. What happened was it did not do a damn thing. The car was just as aggressive and I think may have honked as it passed. So that's an example of national pride, and rightfully so. And from that time, I learned that with some people and some behaviors, you cannot, it's just not worth the energy. You can't outdo them because they are so far gone. Now, I don't want to say that in a sense of giving in to that Israel is, you know, what's going on as being mentioned here in this book is so far gone, but I do think one has to consider that level of consciousness that is so far gone when considering one's choices of how to act or counterattack. Jeff Halper, in his book War Against the People, Israel and Palestine and Global Pacification, he explains that the occupation is not a financial burden on the state, but the exact opposite, both in terms of Palestine being an invaluable testing ground for new equipment on behalf of a global military hegemon serving other militaries across the globe. Quote, Israel is a small country scrambling to carve out a niche in the transnational military industrial complex, Halper writes. So that is one of the gists of the book. Invaluable testing ground for new equipment on behalf of a global military hegemon serving other militaries across the globe, a transnational military industrial complex. Israel's Palestine laboratory thrives on global disruption and violence. The worsening climate crisis will benefit Israel's defense sector in a future where nation states do not respond with active measures to reduce the impacts of surging temperatures, but instead ghettoize themselves Israel style. What this means in practice is higher walls, tighter borders, greater surveillance of refugees, facial recognition, drones, smart fences, and biometric databases. By 2025, the border surveillance industrial complex is estimated to be worth U.S. $68 billion, and Israeli companies like Elbit are guaranteed to be among the main beneficiaries. Well, that made me a little queasy just to read that. That's intense. I mean, that's the level it's at with the investments and the money. So no matter what is going on, those people are highly invested in this stuff, as you just heard. Settler groups are always looking for new opportunities to increase their numbers. It's conceivable that willing evangelical Christians, one of the Jewish state's biggest backers, could be a major group looking to emigrate to the West Bank. That was something I learned of the evangelical Christians are right up there with the messianic Jewish supremacism. And here's a crazy one. When Israel took in thousands of Ukrainian Jews after the Russian invasion in 2022, settlers distributed a leaflet in Russian that offered assistance in hosting them in towns and settlements of Judea and Samaria. One commentator urged a rewrite, fleeing occupation? Let us help you become the occupier. Man, can't make that stuff up. Palestinians need to be monitored, imprisoned. Referring to other historical examples, this kind of toxic ideology fuels Israel's daily reality in Palestine by propagating the lie that Palestinians are inherently violent and irrational. They can't help being terrorists. In this telling, being occupied for more than half a century is a mere footnote. The Palestinians need to be monitored, imprisoned, tortured, and killed. Israel needs to keep them in a high-tech cage because the alternative is genocide against the Jews. Now, I found that very interesting because if that is the logic or illogic, there is the justification for the genocidal attacks, which is a sorry state of affairs if out of fear and that they feel like the alternative, if they don't do these atrocities that have been going on since the inception of Israel, of Ilan Pape's ethnic cleansing of Palestine to find out about that, then, you know, I don't know that I believe that that's their reasoning, but for some of them, it may well be a fear of being genocided gives them a justifiable reason to genocide. And here's the bit about Jewish supremacism. Ironically, it's only in the Israeli press, namely Haaretz, and not in the U.S. media, at least in the mainstream, that the most honest appraisal of Israel appears. The Palestinian media and many in the Arab world have been accurately reporting the situation for decades. Jewish journalist Amira Haas, who lives in Ramallah, wrote in Haaretz in 2022 that Israel is now a, quote, Jewish mutation, end quote, due to its embrace of messianic Jewish supremacism. It's only a matter of time, Haas warns, that these Jews will be a majority in the Israeli parliament. The re-election of Netanyahu as prime minister in November 22 with the most extreme right-wing coalition in the country's history signaled an escalation in the threats facing Palestinians. The far-right Religious Zionism Alliance became the third largest political bloc in the Knesset, advocating Jewish supremacism and forced removal of Palestinians. It was the equivalent of the KKK breaking down the door brandishing an assault weapon. This book is written as a warning of the frightening world that could be born if Israeli-style ethno-nationalism continues its ascent in a century already dominated by unaccountable state power. And he mentions other countries. So, basically, there's this humongous business aligned with a psychotic, paranoid religiosity. Not to forget the Levantine gas, natural gas, which is perhaps one of the main under-the-radar regions for a lot of what's going on. But censure must happen if the Palestine laboratory is to lose its luster. In 2020, the Human Rights Council released a list of companies, local and foreign, operating in illegal West Bank settlements in East Jerusalem. It included Airbnb, Booking.com, Expedia, JCB, TripAdvisor, and Motorola Solutions. None of these firms stopped operating there because there was barely any public or political pressure to do so. Bruce Stagno, Deputy Executive Director for the Advocacy at Human Rights Watch, said that the UN report of offending corporations should, quote, put all companies on notice to do business with illegal settlements is to aid in the commission of war crimes, end quote. Thus, that's where he mentions the investment potential. Human rights could become a mainstream investment consideration. So, you know, when you're like, oh, well, I want to go on vacation, and ooh, that's so cool, I found a cheap rental with some groovy people by Airbnb. Okay, we'll have a good time. But are they supporting war crimes? Then, you know, think twice. And on the last page, this is a quote from Israeli human rights lawyer Itai Mack. Of course, it's a contradiction with most Israelis being indifferent to the occupation, he continued. But I found out that many Israelis could connect to the story of the arms sales and the casualties of it. Plus, see the ties to Jewish morality and history. From the extreme right wing to the extreme left, many Israelis understand this connection, end quote. However, only a tiny percentage of Israeli Jews are pushing to end Israelis' defense relationships. Looking for accountability through the Israeli court justice, Mack said, is over. Quote, it's time to move on from the legal aspect to bring the campaign to another arena because the Israeli court system won't bring justice, end quote. Israel and its supporters must make a choice between their commitment to Zionism and adherence to liberal values. It's impossible to continue to believe in both, considering the state of apartheid across Israel and Palestine. The Israeli defense industry is banking on its prowess to continue impressing global clients in a time of conflict, insecurity, and growing concern over climate change. That's a safe bet. Israel has the tools to help any nation that can pay avoid the worst aspects of societal collapse, at least for a time. Yet Israel will need to be constantly on its guard, avoiding the endlessly exhausting number of catastrophic outcomes that could befall it, from a surge in worldwide BDS support to inspiring Palestinian leadership that isn't corruptible. Losing its reputation as a pariah nation with public opinion in many countries steadily turning against the Jewish state will be impossible without a radical change in its behavior and defense policies. So that's it for the review of the Palestine Laboratory, Anthony Lowenstein, How Israel Exports the Technology of Occupation Around the World. It's a local issue, and it's a global issue, and it's a It's a multi-bajillion dollar issue, and it affects virtually everyone around the Mother Earth because it has to do with social media and surveillance, even though a large percentage of people aren't even on those. So maybe it doesn't affect everyone, but it does because of all the countries mentioned. So yeah, do further research if you like. If you want to skip the book, you could watch an interview with Lowenstein online. It's an excellent segue. I don't know that I'll have it for next week, but Todd Miller's Empire of Borders discusses much of the same kind of stuff that is in this book, but in a more global sense. So thanks for listening, and shalom.